get off this set.
Never mind that.
Why, that's me! Look at me! I'm an old man!
I'm Dr. Emmett Brown. I'm standing here on the parking lot at...
Thank God I still got my hair! October 26th. What is this thing I'm wearing?
Wow, this is a radiation suit.
Radiation suit? Of course. Because of all the fallout from the atomic wars. This is truly amazing. A portable television studio. No wonder your president has to be an actor. He's got to look good on television.
Whoa, this is it. This is the part coming up, Doc.
No. This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
What did I just say?
The flux capacitor stores... This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts! 1.21 gigawatts! Great Scott! What the hell is a gigawatt? How could I have been so careless? 1.21 gigawatts! Tom, how am I going to generate that kind of power? It can't be done, can it?
Look, all we need is a little plutonium.
Oh, I'm sure that in 1985, plutonium is available in every corner drugstore, but in 1955, it's a little hard to come by. Marty, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid you're stuck here.
Whoa, Doc, stuck here? I can't be stuck here. I got a life in 1985. I got a girl.
Is she pretty?
Doc, she's beautiful. She's crazy about me. Look at this. Look what you wrote here, Doc. I mean... That says it all. Doc, my only hope.
Marty, I'm sorry, but the only power source capable of generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
What did you say?
A bolt of lightning. Unfortunately, you never know when or where it's ever going to strike.
We do now.
This is it. This is the answer. It says here that a bolt of lightning is going to strike the clock tower precisely 10:04 p.m. next Saturday night. If we could somehow harness this lightning, channel it into the flux capacitor, this might work. Next Saturday night, we're sending you back to the future.
Are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest
is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those winning old boys raised on shotguns. From the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the Western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway night, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
God's name is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
November 27, 2015. Once again, we have scientific fraud coming out of government science agencies. In this case, NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. They are known to have taken past temperature data and have adjusted it downward to make it appear that it has been colder in the past. They have then taken current data and have adjusted it upward to make it appear as if it's been warmer than it actually is. They then take all that data and they say, we have global warming. If you just take the actual data without the manipulation, it is shown that temperature data has been flat for a very long time. Not only that, NOAA refuses to use satellite data, which is the most accurate and the most objective. But you see, this is the government. There is an agenda to say there is global warming, so NOAA and the government is far from being objective. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, is the nation's leading collector of climate data. Every day, NOAA analyzes vast amounts of data to predict changes to our climate, weather, oceans, and coasts. The agency also publishes monthly temperature averages across the nation and compares those numbers to historical temperature records. As the nation's self-proclaimed authority on environmental intelligence, NOAA should be held to the highest scientific standards. This means their conclusions should be objective, independent of political consideration, and based on all available sources of information. But we know this is not so, because we know that these are government scientists, and if they do not go along with the agenda, they will lose their funding. NOAA's top official, Catherine Sullivan, has described the agency's role as providing timely, reliably, and actionable information based on sound science every day to millions of Americans. In testimony before the House Science Committee, NOAA's Deputy Administrator Manson Brown made similar remarks, noting the importance of satellite data. He said that NOAA's ability to deliver environmental intelligence starts with keeping the pulse of the planet, especially the atmosphere and the ocean, and this is a central capability where space-based assets come into play. So why does NOAA leave out satellite data when it releases climate projections? Because they have to say there's global warming, and the satellites say otherwise. NOAA often fails to consider all available data in its determinations and climate change reports to the public. A recent study by NOAA published in the journal Science made adjustments to historical temperature records, and NOAA trumpeted the findings as refuting the nearly two-decade pause in global warming. The study's authors claimed these adjustments were supposedly based on new data and new methodology, but the study failed to include satellite data. These people will do anything to show there is global warming. Atmospheric satellite data, considered by many to be the most objective, has clearly showed no warming for the past two decades. This fact is well documented, but has been embarrassing for an administration to push through costly environmental regulations. In other words, we do not need to get out of our cars and lose our homes because of global warming, because there is no such thing. Instead, NOAA focused its study on surface temperatures, monitoring that is often flawed because these sites measure thousands of independent temperature readings and utilize a hodgepodge of different methods that have changed over time. For example, measurements from land-based stations can be skewed because of their location and proximity to surrounding heat-holding asphalt in urban areas. So you see, these people are massive fear-mongers, and they will do whatever it takes to control our lives with this false science of global warming, because they want to destroy the industrialized economy and bring in a green dark age where you have very little power, very little food, and very little water. They call it sustainability, which is why I say they are trying to develop a sustainable world government based on climate change.
I'm curious if so. It's. I want to understand this. I do find it highly interesting that the president of the Sierra Club, when asked what the satellite data demonstrate about warming, apparently is relying on staff. So
It's just a mistake.
The nice thing about the satellite data is these are objective numbers.
Correct.
And the numbers over the last 18 years, are you familiar with the phrase, the pause?
The answer is yes, and essentially we rest on our position.
And to what you said, you are familiar with the pause, so to what does the phrase, the pause, refer? I'm sorry, you said you were familiar with that term, so I asked to what does it refer?
Essentially, it's the slowing of global warming during the 40s, sir.
During the 40s? Is it not the term that the global warming alarmists have used to explain the inconvenient truth, to use a phrase popularized by former Vice President Al Gore, that the satellite data over the last 18 years demonstrate no significant warming whatsoever? Global warming alarmists call that the pause because the computer models say there should be dramatic warming, and yet the actual satellites taking the measurement don't show any significant warming.
But, Senator, 97% of the scientists concur and agree that there is global warming and anthropogenic impact with regards to global
warming. The problem with that statistic that gets cited a lot is it's based on one bogus study. And indeed, your response, I would point to your response, is quite striking. I asked about the science and the evidence, the actual data. We have satellites. They're measuring temperature. That should be relevant. And your answer was, pay no attention to your lying eyes and the numbers that the satellites show. Instead, listen to the scientists who are receiving massive grants who tell us, do not debate the science.
Sir, this is one of the national pastimes in America, and while we're debating what 97% of scientists have already settled, the 3% that we, as they say, have invested in with regards to the carbon industry, you know, our planet is cooking and heating up and warming. So this is one of the reasons why...
So hold on a second. It is the Sierra Club's position that right now, the Earth is cooking up and heating and warming. Is that the Sierra Club's? I mean, I just want to quote you and understand.
I'm saying I concur with 97% of the of our as a
give me the number for 911.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to Mad Science. We got Thomas Anderson on here. We got Steve and my friend Mike. And basically, if you jump over there to www.shazizradio.com/superchat.html, you'll get the pleasure of being able to talk to two different chat rooms at the same exact time there. That's why it's the super chat. Posted some links over there, one from a video producer out there called Grindall out there. He really cracks me up. He's a good guy. You may go check his YouTube channel out. But essentially, it's about global warming. It's a congressman talking to, I believe it's the Sierra Club member or something like that, about why they don't use satellite data to essentially add to the numbers to get the facts straight about the so-called global warming / climate change / climate disruption and whatever it's going to be next week. Anyway, the second video down there is a little bit that's from Anita Evangelist, Anita Fuentes. She showed a little bit of clips from Black Friday madness, where people out there beating each other toothless trying to get a toaster or whatever it is they're getting on sale. So these are the kind of things that we have to contend with out here, and this is why I call it mad science, because like my friend Mike said off air a little while ago, we should be a whole lot further advanced than what we are today. But if you go drop on down one more video down there, you'll look and see what Robert Murray Smith has been up to. He's had some graphene-impregnated plastic that they were shooting AK-47 shells at, and it held up. So there's some pretty impressive technology as far as strengthening plastic. Everybody out there knows about carbon fibers and the things that you can do with that. But with all these researchers out there, such as Robert Murray Smith and different guys out there working in alternative energy stuff, there's so many different technologies that are available to us out here as the average Joe. You know, if you are relying on corporations to send out all the nifty gizmos like the iPhone 6, you know, when they sell you the iPhone 3, they already got the iPhone 6 and probably 7 and they're on. But they got to make some money off of it. So all the technology that you got in your hand, you can be rest assured that somewhere on a shelf somewhere in a warehouse is something that's way better than what you got. So if you want to make any advancements out here, it's basically going to come down to you not waiting around for them to share their technology and tap into some of these resources out there, such as these guys like Robert Murray Smith, who are really doing some fascinating research. He not only did the one about the plastic, but he's been working on supercapacitors as well, you know, really rapidly charging and quick discharging capacitors with a lot of power potential. Not only that, he also worked in printable ink to the extent that he actually printed a heater on the wall to see if it could be done. And sure enough, he did it. You know, he's made TV antennas out of printable ink, basically printed out his TV antenna on a piece of paper and was able to get a signal with it. So the technologies are there. We just need to use them. Excuse me. My sinuses are acting up there, guys. Anyway, yeah.
It must be pretty hot over there and all that global warming.
Oh, yeah. That's that global warming. That's what that noise is you hear in the background, is that heater trying to keep up with all that global warming. You know? And if you want, go back and look through some of my videos and you'll see how to properly panic during global warming. If you need a good laugh, that's the one to see. If you want to know how the dinosaurs, go back and look at my video called Caveman Killed the Dinosaur, you know, that methane. That's why I was telling you, Thomas, we need to go into cork business, you know, because those cows out there, you know, you're corking this side and the cork in that side, and you'll save the planet. I don't know how the cow's going to fare, but other than that. Anyway.
It'll turn all that milk into chocolate and strawberry milk.
Might have cow bombs everywhere out there, man.
You know, because it'll turn the milk into chocolate and strawberry milkshake.
Yeah. Could you imagine you drive down a road and you hear this big boom and you look over, oh, don't worry, it's just another cow. It's going to pressurize with all that methane if they can't get rid of it. Anyway.
It is.
Yeah.
Considering all of the funding out there for all sorts of weird and useless scientific research, such as the event they did in County Cork in Ireland, where they put backpacks on the backs of cows to measure the amount of methane coming out of their mouths, and the amount of funding that's going into shale gas extraction, wouldn't it be more sensible to harvest methane from bovines rather than, you know, basically pollute the water table to extract shale gas?
If they want to get something useful out of that, why couldn't they put a internal combustion engine and tap that into the methane off the cow and have the cow walking around with some spotlights, you know, to light up the place while the little internal combustion engine's running off the methane?
Well, in fairness, it's not the first time I've been to Texas and I've seen a double-axle pickup truck with a cow in the back. It's just they weren't harvesting the fuel source they had readily available.
Yeah, I could save on fuel, man. Well, you know how it goes. It's insanity because we'd rather go out on Black Friday and beat each other toothless to try to get that new toaster or something like that, you know?
They only have the name Half Friday. It should be Black and Blue Friday.
Yeah, Black and Blue and Toothless Friday.
The ironic thing is the sale prices that they give the goods for on Black Friday is actually what it probably costs to make them.
Well, that would probably shock the most individuals out there from what you actually pay from it to what it actually costs them to bring it to you, you know. There's a lot of middlemen in between you and that toaster, that's for sure. You know, 300% markup would be probably putting it slightly.
Well, so you can tell how expensive your grocery bill is going to be at a grocery store by how cheap the 2 liters of soda are. Because the cheaper they are, the more everything else costs. They literally buy 2 liters at some of those places and sell them at a loss. Because once you get people in there picking some of those up for whatever, then they're picking up stuff they're paying $2-3 extra on that they wouldn't have spent elsewhere, you know?
Correct me if I'm wrong. Doesn't soda have CO2 in it?
Yep.
Well,
lots of CO2.
You're going to have to carbon tax the heck out of people's soda or make them drink flat soda, man. You know what I mean?
Well, Dash, you and I are going to play.
What'd you say, Steve?
A Pioneer Car Stereo costs about $14 to produce, but they sell it for $180.
Man.
A lot of profit.
Well, anyway, look.
You sure it doesn't just cost $14 to get it imported to the U.S.? It probably costs more like $5.
Y'all gonna drink flat soda? Y'all gonna drink flat soda and you're gonna drink flat beer. And I don't wanna hear no lip off of you because you gotta save the planet.
Then you don't get to drive that sporty car. You gotta walk somewhere and ride a bike. So Poland Bears have got to drown so you can have a mirage, which doesn't actually exist anyway. You're evil, Shaviz. You're evil.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, Shaviz, I'd like to hear from Mike. From Mike, actually, about his fluorescent strip stuff because I'm really into that.
All right, Steve, I got to step out for a second. I got an emergency to deal with. Can you take over the show for a minute?
I'll try. But
behave
Mike,
yourself.
Do you want to give us a rundown on what you've been doing? Because for me, that is my thing. I love food. I love horticulture, and I love trying to mix the two with mad science. So if you could just give us a rundown of what you've been doing over the last number of years, I'm sure people would love to hear it.
Well, last few years, I started looking back into history to see basically where we might have went wrong or what was already known and what kind of patents were out there. Did a lot of searching through old books and patents. The fluorescent light bulb that I did, that's basically turned into a capacitor. Instead of using the two internal connections on there, I sealed off the one end and put the connection on the outside of glass, so it's basically a capacitor. The fluorescent lights, they all light by capacitance. It's not a direct connection that's needed.
Mike, we've got a lot of people listening in a lot of different countries around the world. They tune in regularly. You'd be quite surprised by the number of listeners we get. But if you could just give us a brief description of exactly what a fluorescent strip is and how it works, then a lot of the people that are listening that are kind of slightly confused like me might have a clearer understanding of what you've taken and what you've actually turned it into.
Well, the fluorescent bulbs, they have mercury vapor inside of them, and I believe it's like a phosphorescent coating that's on the inside that lights up. And traditionally, we've been connecting two ends to the gas and exciting it that way through the high frequency to get the bulb to light. Basically, okay, we don't need to do it that way. We can put a plate on the outside and excite the gases that way.
I did some research a while back, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with them. It's the inductance lamps, where they literally have a magnetic coil on the outside of the glass, and there is no element inside it. and the magnetic frequency, I think they use radio frequencies, stimulate small beads of mercury and vaporize it, that's in kind of a, for better sense of the word, a small little nipple on the side of the glass ring. And when that starts whizzing round and round and round the tube, it excites all the phosphorant covering, and you get light produced that way. Is that kind of similar to what you're talking about?
It's close, yeah. What you're talking about, that was actually done in the 1800s. I forget exactly who. It might have been Kinraid that might have done that. But there's patents out there for that a long time ago.
And what is the sort of energy usage for this system like?
I believe it's way less than the traditional way.
I mean, I've got T5 fluorescent strips, which are kind of, they don't have the small little plug-in starter. I mean, most people would probably see them as a small white tube, maybe 2 or 3 inches long, maybe 1 and 1.5 inches wide. And on a T8 strip, you plug it into the side of the actual baton where your tube is, and that gives the huge burst to actually get it lit up, and part of the reason why it flickers. When you're using the external plate, do the lights flicker to start up, or are they instant on?
That's the thing, they're instant on. We're not needing the internal heating element. The filament that's in there isn't needed.
Sorry, Mike.
Yeah, the filament, traditionally we have two wires on there, and we're heating up that filament to get the gases to a certain temperature to be able to light it. But the capacitance way, you don't need that heating element at all.
From my perspective, Mike, a lot of what I do is based around trying to grow food, and plants react to certain light spectrums. Have you looked into exactly what light spectrum you're getting out of the tubes when you put an external plate on it?
I haven't done any testing on it, but I believe it's just the same as the traditional way.
I mean, fundamentally, I suppose you're not putting any more energy in. In fact, you're using less energy to recreate the same results.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Well, I think it's definitely a technology that's worth investigating further. I mean, Tom, have you got anything to put into that? Because, I mean, you've got such a broad knowledge.
I was just going to say the inner working, there's actually a gas that whenever you're exciting it, it produces UV rays. There's some visible spectrum. So, like, if you strip away the fluorescent coating, that's the powder that he was talking about, and don't put anything but glass on the outside of it, you get this kind of pale blue with a lot of UV that you can't see. So the coating eventually will, anything that phosphors, it eventually degrades from being phosphored. It's the same effect as if you've ever seen a painting or wallpaper or like a photograph that's been left sitting out in the sun and it fades away. It's because the act of exciting the particles that item uses to produce the color that your eyes see, or reflect, or I should say eject the photons of the colors that your eyes see, is the atoms are basically being jiggled around until they disconnect from each other, and the compound that was once there is no longer that compound. It changes compounds. This is kind of like an interesting thing that a lot of people don't know, is that there's no American flag on the moon. And it's not because we didn't go, it's because there's just a white flag up there now. It's been bleached out by the UV rays from the sun. There's no red, it's basically all white and white stripes, white stars, and a white square instead of being blue, red, and white. And that's basically what's happening to that phosphorescent material, that anything that glows whenever you hit it with something else, like your fluorescent posters and stuff like that, that stuff degrades so much faster than stuff that does not have any glow of itself. You know, it doesn't look like it's lighting up whenever you shine a light on it, like a UV light.
One of the things they'll do to bleaching is ozone. That's something that was known a long time ago. That's one of the most powerful bleaches there is.
Right. Well, and like I said, though, we're not talking about bleaching, though. We're not talking about, chemically breaking something down. We're talking about photonically breaking something down from just the photons hitting it. It doesn't need another compound to destabilize the compound that's there, which is kind of what I've been working on for 3D printing, is photonic injection to get the chemicals to interact with each other so you can turn, say, copper oxide into solid copper and print out solid blocks of copper one layer at a time that way.
With the static electricity, that'll give you ozone no matter where you have static.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm back. What did I miss?
Everything.
Everything. Sorry about that, folks. You had a family situation.
Yeah, we completely destroyed your show, she says.
Well,
I was going to say real quick before we lose topic with what he was talking about. It sounds like what you're doing is you're basically taking an AC wave like you normally use, from a Slayer exciter?
Yeah.
And run it through a coil to like create this massive EMP fluctuation that causes fluorescent light to light up across the room. You're just putting the EMP pulse right up on the light itself. It doesn't have to reach across the air, which means the concentration is much higher for a much lower quantity of power going into it. And you're not ending with a bunch of EMP pulses. It'll end up erasing your hard drive or shutting somebody's pacemaker down or something like that, because it's all...
Yeah, but one other thing that's interesting to note about what he's doing there is one reason why I brought up that one about the capacitors, turning that fluorescent bulb into a capacitor. Not only is he sending the energy wirelessly to the light bulb to light it up, but then is able to, in turn, use that system as like a variable capacitor by sliding those tubes and take energy back off of that bulb and use it to charge up capacitors on the other side. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. You better watch it. You're going to get Justin back in here. That's what he was talking about. He said, stop using coils. Use tubes.
Well, guys, I just want to jump in there with a very brief thing about butterfly wings. Believe it or not, we might have paint in the very near future that is not subject to UV degradation. During the Victorian period from the 1850s onwards, people that collected butterflies, it was a very popular pastime, and they've still got butterflies that were collected well over 165 years ago that have not degraded. And when scientists started looking at the compounds actually in the wings, they realized it didn't break down under UV penetration. So there is the possibility in the near future of getting paints that you can paint on the outside of your house that the sun won't affect.
Was it metal oxides in there?
I can't find the link. It was a while back I looked at it. I'm trying to pull it up now for
that, you. That sounds
it's
like
just one of this. It's one of the kind of interesting side points of mad science. Is a lot of the stuff out there that they do develop and they do create doesn't seem to be very beneficial to humanity. But having to paint your house once, to my mind, would be a good idea.
Well, you know, nature's a good teacher, man. You could be you'd be surprised what you can learn if you pay attention to what's going on out there.
Mm-hmm.
These
if you can put a paint together that doesn't fade in UV, then what's going to happen is it's going to continue absorbing that UV and converting it into visible light, so it doesn't have a chance to penetrate deeper to destroy something that is UV sensitive. You basically end up
with a
breakdown under UV rays ever because of that coating.
Well, this is why I bring these things up, because everybody's got good ideas.
Well, and that's another point to be made right there, is that bringing everybody to the table with these ideas right here. And we've been networking for quite some time and working towards getting some sort of setup. You know, like the Geek Group, they actually got a building that they come and join each other, and they got machinery in there, and they're working on projects and stuff like that. We need a bunch of these all over the place, you know, one in pretty much every community that the average Joe is in control of. And there's ways to fund it, you know, without you know, all the shenanigans.
voxelblock.com/page2.html. There's a whole document on how to set something like that up and how to make it run and fly for... Basically, the people can pay like $5 a day for a whole day to come and use whatever equipment's there. Oh. That's not just covering space. That's also
There's
that's also covering the tools and the power and everything else.
There's a lot of equipment out there. See, one of the things that I keep messing around with and having problems with is, like, you know, for instance, the direct drive motors out of the front loader washing machines. You know, it makes an awesome generator, but then you need to retool, like, the shaft on there so that it'll fit, you know, either a pulley or a gear, or be able to couple to something else to use it as a generator head. That would be something that if somebody had a, you know, a good lathe, metal lathe there that, you know, was in my neighborhood, I could actually get that tooled up without having to go try to find a machine shop around here. Most of the machine shops in my neighborhood, they want an arm and a leg just to do something, you know.
Or pay to have it shipped.
Yeah.
That's one of the biggest problems we run into. All stuff is designed to a certain extent. It makes modification pretty difficult.
But if you had a 3D printer that could print metal like Thomas was talking about, heck, we could print out our own parts like that, you know, and ship parts back and forth to each other, even if we had to do most of it via mail until we actually got a centralized facility that we could all get together and work in.
Well, that's kind of that's just the beginning of what I'm working on. Eventually, that printer will be able to print every single part, even the magnets inside the motors. So instead of sending you a part that you need that we've printed out here, we just send you the parts to put yourself a printer together, and you just go ahead and throw the stuff into it to break it down and print out whatever you're needing.
In the electric motor technology, all the information you need there to build the perfect electric motor has been there all along, man. It, just take a little bit of what you've seen from the hard drive video that I did, for example. I spun that up with a Dremel using a little a buffer wheel, spun it up to over 5,000 RPMs, and I got 450 volts AC out of that thing. All right, now keep in mind, that's not going to run your house, but the technology that I'm working towards, as far as the plasma technology, where you're taking that energy off and moving it to a different point, as opposed to actually putting direct load on the generator, that's all I need is the high voltage portion. I don't need the current watts and amps. I don't need all that, you know. And it's not going to take me a lot to move this stuff quickly. You see what I'm saying? Because voltage is pressure. It's like blowing up a balloon. If you got a capacitor, as long as you got enough pressure to keep filling that thing up, and if it's empty until you pressurize it to its top potential, you can move that energy into it. And if you're using this on demand, you can see what I'm talking about in the video that I done called Unsubscribe, because I got a set of capacitors that start from largest all the way down to smallest, and you can literally watch, as long as you're putting energy to the biggest capacitor, you don't even have to work hard. Just every so often turn that little hand crank generator, or every so often hit it with an AC pulse, and you charge that doggone capacitor bank up, and all the other systems below that will remain constant running off of that deal. So if you have the capability of moving energy from point A to point B rapidly, voltage is pressure, and you can continue to fill up those banks and use that energy on demand. So that's why when I show stuff like that little hard drive motor being spun up there, and I get the crazies out there come on there and say, well, it took more energy to spin that than it did the other, you know. But then I took another hard drive, use that hard drive motor to spin the other hard drive, and I was still able to light up a big long strand of 120 volt that normally runs off 120 volts AC, big long strand of LEDs off of that thing. All right, and that was only 12 volts to run that doggone motor there. It's basically a 12 volt DC pulse motor. You see what I'm saying? If you can get the RPMs up on any generator, you can produce a massive amount of high voltage.
I don't have synesthesia, so I can't see what you're saying. I can only hear you.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's where that video conferencing thing would come in handy, we were talking about. Anyway.
Yeah, but should this, if we have video conferencing, I'd have to put the pants on.
Oh, yeah, we've...
We can make it one way.
We'll just leave it the way it is, then.
Show.
All right, well, anyway, basically what I'm trying to point out is if you look at the fluorescent bulb, it only takes high frequency in order to energize it. You can do it with a flare exciter, you can do it with a Tesla coil, you can do it with, I've done it with a 1.5 volt battery and a barbecue igniter, you know, electric barbecue igniter. All it needs is that static discharge, that high voltage range, and it'll light up, you know. And so you're actually moving energy from one point to the next. And using what Mike was doing with that doggone fluorescent bulb, you now have a way that you can take that energy back off that bulb that you just lit up and charge something else. So, you know, while you got your fluorescent lighting going, what's the problem taking some of that energy back off and throwing it off into a capacitor bank and trying to help refeed the system?
Yeah, we're basically reusing it.
Yeah, because according to the conservation of energy, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So where does it go? It's still there. You just moved it from one place to the next. You know, nature's going to balance itself out. No matter what you do, nature's going to balance itself out. The lens effect, whenever you have a generator and then you turn the load on, that energy flows right back into it and creates a second field that opposes the first field. And it's going to, the more energy you push through there, the harder that field's going to get, and the harder those two are going to press on each other until that generator comes to a complete halt. Using what Gerard Morin's been working with, where he took a 2,500-watt generator and pumped energy into a 50 kV transformer and then dumped that down into a 25 kV transformer, which is equivalent to what I was talking about with the capacitor, a large bank down to a smaller one, and then running your load off of that. He was able to run three 1,500-watt space heaters and a reciprocating saw off of a 2,500-watt generator. And the key to listen to in that video is that motor in the background. Not one time did that motor in the background bog down. Now, the only thing that ever bogged down was the reciprocating saw when he turned on another deal. It only briefly slowed down the speed of that, and then it caught back up and ran just fine. So he ran what should have been enough to pretty much shut that generator down that way.
The generator that he used, there's no iron in there, in the coils. It's a coreless generator.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's one of the keys in there. When you don't have the iron in there, you don't have the lens law kicking in like you normally do.
Well, you'll still get it to some extent with the coils once you put it under a load. But if you move that energy away from that load, such as turning it into plasma, you know, it's like boiling water into steam. It's still water. It's just expanded and pressurized, but it's still water. You still got the same amount of water. It's just different, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, with that said, if you take the energy from the generator, change it into a completely different state of matter, and essentially it's pressurized just like the mercury arc rectifier from back in the late 1800s, you still have the same amount of energy. It's just now pressurized into high voltage DC on the opposite side. So, you know, it's as simple as that. And with that said, there's also a guy out there who had been around for years that I can't remember what his name is, but he made a generator that instead of having the armature the way you see in a normal generator, it was kind of offset like a spiral shape, so that it basically corkscrewed through the field, if you understand what I'm trying to say here.
Or like a wobbling type of thing.
Yeah. So instead of like a direct armature where that field is like clamping down on it like a brake, it basically splits the field to where there's a little bit of time to overcome that back EMF as it's rotating around.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you could print without using any metal, if you could print a rotor and wind it in pretty much the same manner with a little bit of a twist, you can get it to corkscrew through that field without having to fight so hard. So at the very least, you end up with a more efficient motor generator.
Mm-hmm.
car AC air compressors have a wobbling type of rotor in them, I believe, which might be something that could be used.
Well, if you ever get an opportunity, do a video, like take one of those things apart and show the guts inside there, because that's where you find a lot of good stuff, microwave ovens and stuff like that. You know, there's so many different parts that could be used out of appliances that most people throw away. That's why I like the post-apocalyptic inventor out there on YouTube, because that's it, what pretty much what he does. And he'll show you, like, there's so many different versions of electric motors out there, it's mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these motors out there, this can't remember what the name of the video that I did where I had that, let me take a peek on my YouTube channel there. Energy Transfer, I believe, was the one. I run three little fans, and these fan motors come up out of these modern day space heaters. They're like a squirrel cage type fan, but they have an induction motor inside there. And if you look at these motors and the way that they're designed, it's not like the old rotor that it has coils on it. They're brushless motors. They have an aluminum and I believe an iron mix for the rotor itself, but there's notches cut in it sideways. They're kind of at an angle. And the only copper wire on the motor portion of it is two little strips of copper. That's it, you know. And the copper wire on the transformer portion is actually producing the magnetic flux, you know, set up for 120 volts AC. There ain't no reason why you couldn't change the input voltage and still be able to get that same type of motor to run. But I ran three of those just by cranking that front loader washer machine motor over with a pair of vice grips. And then I took that same doggone motor and hooked my drill to it, and I ran that motor through a fluorescent bulb that wouldn't work any standard deal because that bulb was burnt up, you know, but the gas was still in there. And I ran that through in series to that tungsten element light bulb, 150 watt light bulb, and was able to not only light up the fluorescent bulb, which wouldn't light in your standard socket anymore, but it also lit up the tungsten element light bulb. And what's important to note about that process was that if you watch when I just lit it up by itself, the torque on that thing, you could see where my hand was twisting on that drill once that light bulb kicked in. But whenever I run it through the fluorescent bulb first, it drastically reduced how much pressure and power it took for that drill to have to force that past that that back EMF. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So all we're doing is moving energy from one place to the next. We just need to figure out how to do it more efficiently. And that's what technology, like what Robert Murray Smith is working on. You know, he's not only making it a better conductor, but it's also giving you better storage capability as well. And if you have the capability of charging and discharging a capacitor at extremely rapid rates, and you can keep that thing filled up at all times, every system after that, with a smaller bank, is going to continuously run. What do you guys think? Dang, everybody went to sleep. Don't everybody jump the microphone at once, you might chip a tooth. Excuse me. Is that global warming?
I think that's one of the keys to capturing the energy that we're using and trying to reuse it.
Yeah.
Actually, the Holy Grail would be literally to take all the energy that's around you and organize it. We're in a sea of energy, but the problem is it's all disorganized, so it's constantly wave-canceling itself. It's not useful. You can't use something that's not organized. So, the only use you can get out of disorganized energy is heat, to like heat a place up. I was kind of looking at why ceramic heaters are more efficient than gas heaters, and it's partially because the energy that's coming out of those is coming out two-dimensionally. So there's no chance inside the filament itself inside the sheet of material to cancel itself out. So all the heat that's coming out is the atoms are not knocking against each other and canceling out their own weight. If you've ever sat in a bathtub and like basically just started moving your hand up and down in the water to cause a wave in the water, and then gauge the wave as it's coming back at you and do an inverse, like when it's going down, you want to have your hand in the water and lift up to try to force it to stop, and you can cancel the wave of the water swishing back and forth much faster than it will if you just let it kind of bounce back and forth until it kills itself.
Yeah, that's
and you're getting that. Well, you're getting that same effect with those any kind of burning gas, because the stuff is just a bunch of atoms that are just banging around against each other at a rapid rate from being combusted. If you have another look, you'll find that even though it costs more for the heater itself, your computer actually makes heat for less electricity than the ceramic heaters that you can buy for like 20, 30 bucks at your hardware store or at Walmart. And I mean, that's because it is completely two-dimensional. There's no opposing plate stuck together in like little fins facing each other where they could end up canceling each other out because they're slamming against each other. Instead, it's just shooting straight out of the case.
The ceramic or quartz heaters, they're closer to infrared radiant energy. I've been trying to find these new bulbs that they're making. I believe most of them are from China. They're using carbon fiber twisted into like a element, like an incandescent light bulb in a tube. And you're getting radiant energy off of those. I haven't been able to find them in the United States.
Is that
any heat source that you buy that doesn't have like a fan or something pushing air across it is going to be called an induction heater?
Well, these are different.
Or a radiant heater, because it's just radiating off it under its own effect. That means basically the highly charged atoms in the gases that have just been heated up are bouncing against atoms that are in the air around them and discharging some of their energy. So they leave the scenario cooler as they head back to the heating element, and the particles they banged into are now hotter, and they're moving, they're basically, it's just a chain reaction where it just keeps knocking against each other, and heat's basically being lost each time that happens into the outer component. So eventually that heat works its way out into the room. If you blow some air over that to get away from that radiation property like you have with like a radiator, it just works a lot more efficiently. Instead of it just, it's like if you sit in front of a fire, the front of you will be just boiling off and the back of you is still freezing.
That's what these carbon filament bulbs are. They're strictly radiant energy. They're inside of a quartz glass tube. They're also making them for paint curing booths. The glass tube doesn't get hot. You can drip water on it and you won't shatter. There's no heat on the glass. It's all purely radiant. It's only being picked up by the surrounding, which is different than the elements that we've been using.
That's pretty impressive, because if you can control heat, you got it made there,
Yep.
Actually, this is the secret to getting the energy we need is being able to control the heat that's already around us. Until you hit absolute zero, there's always energy in the air around you. You cannot have an area where there's no heat unless it's literally at absolute zero. And we've already seen that atoms do very strange things when you drop them to that absolute zero mark or get close to it. So even like in the Antarctic, there's, for every cubic foot of air down there, there's probably still like, a couple thousand watts worth of power in the heat that's in that air. Just because it doesn't feel warm to us doesn't mean that it's still not, there's still not heat there. And if you can figure out how to organize that, you can actually convert that into that wattage that I just mentioned and shuffle that off to run through a circuit to do whatever you want it to do.
Well, to some extent, Peltier elements would be like a baby step towards what you're talking about, because they work off of a temperature difference. If it's warmer on one side than it is on the other, it's going to generate a little bit of burn.
You're learning how to turn electricity out of heat, but you still have to create a higher threshold of heat on one side versus the other side. If you set that out, just set it out on the plane in the middle of the night in the Antarctic, or even in your bedroom or out in the backyard, even during a hot summer day, it won't generate a lick of power. The only way they generate power, if you set them out like that, is if they're painted black on one side and the sun comes up and starts warming one side up and the underside that's shaded is cooler, then they'll generate some power.
Yeah.
The trick is to be able to take those, the heat is literally just little gas particles in the atmosphere moving around. They're literally, like right now, there are gas particles. Even if you don't have a fan in your room and the air is completely stagnant feeling, there's still gas particles in the air around you hitting your skin at 900 miles an hour and bouncing off of you. Because of the heat. That's entirely because of the heat. Now, because they're moving around in a completely random fashion, you need to find a way to collect the energy from each of those individual gas particles and organize that energy coming from them.
One of the things that they were doing a long time ago, the Carl Lind device, it's a cooling mechanism where they were making the liquid air back in the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of resembles Tesla's electromagnet coil. You have the pipes going through one direction and the intake's going one way and the exhaust is going the other, and you're extracting all that heat. They were dropping down to like minus 420 degrees, I believe.
That's cold.
Oh, yeah. They were using the liquid air then to power all kinds of things.
Mm. Yeah, because as soon as it warms up, it starts expanding.
Yeah, one time they were delivering it to homes like it was milk in big containers. Basically like what you see now, what they're calling liquid nitrogen, which I believe is the same thing as liquid air.
I want to say nitrogen, when it's not combined with something else, is just a gas. So if you eat, there's a lot of compounds that it can be mixed, other elements you can mix it with, that it still remains a gas, meaning it boils at below room temperature. So,
well, just using the radiant energy, you know, the heat off the sun, everybody knows whenever your car windows are up in the summertime, your car will get extremely hot inside there. There's a lot of heat. A lot of air heat pressure is building up inside that doggone thing. There's even been instances where your windows will literally blow out if it gets too hot in your car.
Mm.
So using the old Stirling engine technology, I mean, they got Stirling engines that, you know, fit in the palm of your hand that'll work off the heat of your hand. You know, the temperature difference in your hand, and when the little diaphragm goes up and lets cool air in, it drops back down. You know, so, you know, scale it up. Make it better, you know. There's ways by which you can actually trap that sun's heat inside. We already know how to do it because you do it with your car all the time. I mean, is that going to have enough torque to run something like a generator head? Not under the conventional way that we're running it, unless you really seriously scaled it up and, you know, was able to trap as much of that heat that you could off of the sun. But if you do it the way that I'm talking about, to where you're not actually putting that generator under a load, it's more than enough. Have you ever seen how fast that some of them little the flywheels will run on the Stirling engines? They use things like little computer disks that they make the flywheels on them things. Those things will get up and cook, man. And as long as you got like magnets tacked to those things, and they're passing through a coil of wire, they're going to induce current flow inside that coil of wire. That energy's still there. Now all you got to do is move that energy away from it, and that way you're not putting it under a direct load, and you can tap that energy off. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
That's it. That makes a good radio. Oh, you guys cracked me.
There's probably a lot of different ways we can go about it.
Well, it's really easy to make high voltage. All right, we've seen that. You can get static discharge. The Wim Hof, the Van de Graaff. More likely the Wim Hof would be the best because there's really absolutely no direct connection between the two discs. They're just going in opposite directions. All right, so to me that'd probably be the best. Van de Graaff more works off of a friction, you know, you got a little bit of resistance going on there, but it's really not as much as you'd think in order to build up that static charge.
Oh, yeah, triboelectric effect is caused actually by atoms coming together and then being pulled away from each other, and the one that has a stronger affinity to needing electrons will steal an electron from the other atom that has a weaker affinity, and because it still doesn't have enough protons between the two to balance out the new amount of electrons, that electron is going to work its way back to where it came from. So when you're not touching, what's going on is the air is bouncing off of one plate as that those two plates are spinning around and into the other plate, carrying the spare electrons.
Well, the same thing could be applied, what you're talking about, to how the atmospheric group is pulling energy out of the air, you know. They got some metal-coated wires on the top, and the wind's blowing past that, and the gases are, you know, changing electrons up there.
Well, and that's why I said you should be able to take plastic sheeting and stretch it horizontal to the ground, right, in plates, and just coat each of those plastic sheets with opposing materials, like the two strongest ones with triboelectric effect on the opposite side of the spectrum seem to be styrene and urethane. So you liquefy styrofoam peanuts, say, with xylene. You can buy it at the hardware store. It's a paint thinner. You just drop it in there until it gets as thick as you can get it, and then take a brush and paint that onto one of the sheets and let it dry, and it'll create this crystal clear sheet of styrene coating the whole surface of it, and then paint the other sheet, the other opposing sheet, with polyurethane, like you use for sealing wood and whatnot. Just coat the surface of it, run some lines across each of those, so that you can collect the electrical discharge that's forming on the surface of it, to run it through a circuit, because the air between it will create a dielectric, so it has to go through the circuit as long as you give it less resistance there. And then just let the air blow between those. That should generate plenty of power, way more than what they've been looking for so far and have been able to achieve just with some wires and whatnot. And it won't have to be super high off the ground. Even when the air is not blowing between that, remember what I said, those gas particles are moving 900 miles an hour. They're zipping back and forth between those two plates, banging against them on those two sheets. And when they hit one, it says, hey, I've got extra electrons. Take this. I can't take it anymore. And it gives it to the air, and then bounces across against the other plate, and it's hungry for those electrons, so it's going to say, give me that. But once they're in the other plate, that atom's like, well, I got this extra electron, I can't do anything with this, and it shucks it, and it ends up going through the system.
Well, and there you go, man. You could essentially, at the very least, we should be so much further advanced in just lighting alone, man. The LED technology out there doesn't rely on a lot of power in order to light up an LED. All it's looking for is electron flow to interact with the material that's inside that LED to release photons of light. And I've actually shown in one of the videos way back where you can take a red LED and you can take and hold it up to the sunlight, and you can get that light to energize the doggone thing and send energy back the other direction. There's a few videos out there where people show where you can charge a cell phone up with a red LED. You know,
obviously it's an LED, meaning light emitting diode.
Yeah,
and solar cells are nothing more than diodes. That's all they are.
Yep.
They're a giant open-faced diode that when you... if you think about a transistor, is actually two diodes usually. The simplest transistor is two diodes jammed together with a middle field being tapped into. So the two wires coming in from either end of the two diodes give you your two legs, and then the third leg is where the two diodes come together. That's your third leg, and when you tap that charge, you put a charge on that third leg,
it allows power to flow from leg one to leg three. If there's no power, then the electrons can't flow through there. It blocks it. So what you're doing is basically not just tapping that third electrode on that open plate, because the sunlight is, photons have an electrical volt charge on them. And when they strike something and they're absorbed by it, they discharge it into the circuit. They're losing their energy into it. So anything that's a diode, if it's open like that so light can hit it, it's going to discharge that electron into it, and because you have the law of conservation, that energy has to go somewhere, and it's easier for it to flow into your circuit.
Well, there you go, man. See?
The solar technology, they were doing that 1800s. They were doing a lot of stuff between the regular heating of water and the electric. Alexander Graham Bell was doing some stuff with, I believe, selenium.
Mm-hmm. Well, I keep saying, just like you said earlier, we're floating in a sea of energy, and you're talking about organizing it, and there's so many different ways. When I talked about, I give the example of an Olympic-sized swimming pool, you know, and you're dumping different volumes of water into that pool, like you got a drop coming off of this over here, and then you got some water running out of your gutter over there, and just different directions. It's all coming in. It don't matter where the energy's coming from. As long as there's an empty space for it to go, that water's going to fill it up until it finally reaches its level. When it's finally leveled out, then you can't get any more in there. But meanwhile, whatever is down below that, the smaller pool, or capacitor, however you want to look at it, because it works pretty much the same way, that energy down there, you'll be able to run a continuous load off of everything under smaller. So if you can keep that, even if you're trickle charging it from 1,000 different directions, you know, 1,000 different frequencies or whatever, you're still going to keep filling that pool up because there's still space for that energy to flow to. You see what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So if you took, like, Tesla's radiant energy patent, essentially you've got a plate of metal that goes up in the air. If you look at how static electricity works, there's some guys out there been flying little quadcopters 300 feet up in the air. And there's an equation out there that'll tell you how many feet off the ground is how many voltage, how much voltage goes up for every so many feet off the ground. And it gets higher and higher as you go. But if you actually look at how things work, if it's connected to directly to the ground, the charge difference actually creates a bubble at the top. And so the energy that you're actually able to drag down is substantially less than it would be if that wasn't connected to the ground. Like, say, if I held up a pole and I wasn't grounded at all, you know, there was like a super insulator in between me and the ground, I could walk around all day long with a long enough pole and keep getting struck by lightning all the time. That static charge would come down and shock the crud out of me. But since it's grounded, you're not able to pick that up. But the atmospheric group guys, they figured out a way by which they could run one strand up there with nano-coated carbon and pick up that static charge and bring it down. So they're pulling 2,000 volts out of the air, dumping it into a huge capacitor bank, and ending up with 9,000 volts on the other end. And they're not doing nothing to get it. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, if you designed a tower that had a really good insulator at the bottom so that there's no potential for it to be grounded to the dirt, and then you come off of that with multiple strands, individual strands of the fine wire, or it doesn't really even have to be any specific. It don't even have to be copper. It could be just metal or aluminum or iron or whatever. It doesn't matter. Just individual strands coming down, and then you got an insulator between that pole and the ground, so there's no way that this is grounded whatsoever. It'll bring down a high charge close enough to the ground, you hit a spark gap across that, and then ground on the opposite side of, say, your capacitor, you'll charge that thing up rapidly from right out of the air. And that's pretty much what they're doing.
that kind of radiant energy collection was started 11 years before Tesla did his work.
Yeah.
It was done by Mark Dewey, 1889. I have the patent here. It's 414-943.
Well, if you can, throw a link down there in the chat room so people can check that patent out.
Okay.
But anyway, the key to the whole deal is we pull energy from everything. If we are not putting all our eggs in one basket, you know, when the sun's out, you got the solar power going. When the wind's blowing, you got the wind power going. You got the static coming all the time, whether it's rainy, sleety, or whatever. It don't matter what the weather is out there. There's so much energy going on in nature, and the fact that we haven't tapped into it in a, you know, common sense manner, it's just crazy. We're here in the year 2015. They were doing things back in the late 1800s and even before that that were more impressive than what we're doing now. The Mercury arc rectifier. Yeah.
Doesn't it seem to be that with electricity supply in particular, it's one size fits all? Because if you look at the websites of most energy producing companies that deliver it to your home, they're using a wide range of different sources now. They use gas, they use fossil fuels, they use electricity, they use wind power. Well, why aren't we incorporating these various devices on our own homes and saying, thanks lads, but yeah, we're all right, we don't need you anymore?
Yeah, that's what I kept saying a long time ago. If you take at least one light bulb off the power grid, that's one less light bulb you have to pay the power company for. But the energy that they're sending down the lines, it's destructive, literally. I don't know if you guys realize this or not, but each one of those lines out there are 7,000 volts apiece. You know, that's a lot of power, you know, going down that line.
It's up to 20,000 volts DC now.
Man, so there you go, man. But either way, it's pretty destructive, and it's actually destructive to your electric motors and your appliances, because, you know, you're putting a lot of power to it. And when you're forcing that much energy through something that doesn't necessarily require that much energy, you're going to produce heat. And heat eventually will wear down the insulator in the wire, and then short it out. You got to buy a new one. So why not dial that thing back to just exactly what that appliance takes to run? You know, instead of having to field a foot or so outside of that electric motor, dial it back to where you still get the same interaction between the magnetic fields, the repulsion and attraction portion of it, and you're not forcing more energy in. You'll note that the doggone things will be cooler, and they'll run more, and they'll last a lot longer. And I would venture to guess, I'd be willing to bet that in your side of the world over there where they use 50 hertz as opposed to 60 hertz, which we use over here, that your appliances last much longer than ours do. I don't know if anybody's ever done any research on that.
Yeah, but she says most of our appliances are actually made by people that know what they're doing.
Well, I think that ours are made by people that know what they're doing, but I think the corporations tell them to deliberately build it like junk. Because it's funny, I listened to a video some time back where this Chinese guy was talking about how we could build stuff a lot better, but they don't want us to build it better, you know. They ask for the junk, they get the junk.
That type of stuff's been going on for years.
It's called
in the electronics industry. It's like, we can put all this extra stuff on this, and like, well, if you do that, since that won't break down by the time we're ready to sell them another one, we'll have no reason. They'll have no reason to buy a new one. You know, it's like, if you can cram everything you can put into a cell phone right now, then it'll be 10 years before you need to buy another phone, because it'll take them that long to create new stuff that you just got to have, that you're willing to actually buy another phone, even though you don't actually, the one you have is still working.
Yeah, called planned obsolescence. The light bulb has to burn out or you can't sell anymore.
there was actually a law that lasted for 75 years, that an auto manufacturer was not allowed to manufacture a car that got more than 25% efficiency.
Well, Japan built its cars with a lifespan of 7 years, and that's to protect not the consumer but the Japanese auto industry.
Yep.
Because they reckon it takes 7 years for people to pay off their debts and earn enough money to buy another one.
Well, they're pushing so you're upside down now.
Well, what's crazy is that
you still hold on it.
When you build that car, when you buy that car brand new, the moment you take it off the doggone deal, it's already depreciated. And the more mileage you get on it, it depreciates even farther. But you take one of the cars from way back in the 50s, those things were built to last. You know, they were army tanks, essentially. Old 57 Chevy, you know. The frames, the metal, everything was all heavy duty on there, and you'll still see some that have been rusted out sitting out in the field, but they're still there, man. And a little bit of work, and you can get that doggone thing to run again.
Model T.
Yeah.
Out in the middle of the New Mexico desert. It's all Model A's and Model T's all over the place out there.
About 5 to 7 years ago, there was a group that set up in Europe called Phones for Cash. And their deal was, is if you had an old mobile or phone, a particularly a high-end one, one of the, maybe the first generation phones, they'd actually pay you quite a lot of money for it. Because groups like BMW, Mercedes, Audi, in Germany in particular, were buying up old mobile phones to take the components out of them. Because they were so well built, they were putting them in brand new $100,000 executive cars.
Wow.
GPS, you know, Bluetooth, all of these various levels of technology. When they first designed the materials, they hadn't quite honed it down to be cheap and nasty, so they're actually having to put some money into it. Because well, you look at an iPhone 6S now, I mean, how much does that cost you? It's hundreds of dollars for a bit of plastic with some components in it. Well, these are the top-end devices that maybe in 10 years' time they're going to, again, come up with an idea that, well, what we can buy is kind of expensive, but what we can recycle is a lot cheaper.
It's ironic that you're talking about that, because that's what I pointed out quite some time back, is that every so often you will find something that they put out on the market that just turned out to be too good. And then eventually it's hard, you can't find them, you know? Those little light bulbs that there's a little LED light bulb that I've been trying to find forever and a day. They came out and I found them in one of the Everything's Dollar Store. And I was using those in some of my experiments because they have a little built-in capacitor. And when you charge them wirelessly, they don't shut off immediately when you shut the wireless power on the other side off, because they charge your capacitor up. So it was not only charging and holding the light, but it was holding the light after you shut the doggone thing off for a few seconds. But every so often they'll put something out there on the market, such as like right now, whenever Raymond brought that X13 over, that blower motor out of a air conditioner, I told Raymond, I said, they made a big mistake when they put this down in front of us, because these things are powerful. You could just spin it over with doggone fingers and get about 29 volts AC off that sucker, and you can rectify that with a DC rectifier, and they were just really super impressive. It's a generator right out of the box. You don't even have to modify it. You know, the front loader washing machines, the direct drive motors, those motors right there are a ready-built generator. So post-apocalyptic, if you can find one of those old washing machines, you got a generator. You see what I mean? Every once in a while, you
what
get
I'm
lucky.
What I'm looking forward to, Shaziz, is once we can effectively print metal materials.
Well, that's kind of like what Thomas was talking about earlier. If you could actually print metal parts, that'd be spectacular.
They had the sintering printers, but they're so outrageously expensive.
Well,
they're also outrageously energized to use that material. You're literally raising metal to the melting point to get the reaction you need.
What about
arc welding?
Mm-hmm.
What about graphene? Graphene technology like Robert Murray Smith's working on, and if you had like graphene impregnated plastic to where you need one piece to be strong, and conductive. You see where I'm going with that? That you could actually print out, heck, you could probably print out circuit boards with a doggone thing.
He was working on all that, and then he stopped doing it for his shop, where he had, like, you know, you could go and buy this stuff.
Yeah.
Nobody was buying it. They had, like, tubs of inks ready to go that you could pick up from them, and there just wasn't enough people picking it up, so...
Well, I hope he still kept his supply, because eventually people will get wise to the value of it, you know?
Right. Well, then it'll be coming from China.
Yeah. But it...
They're getting that kind of strength out of it. Eventually, they could probably 3D print cars.
Yeah, pretty much.
They've already done it. They've already done it. If you look on YouTube, there's a video of them 3D printing the frame of a car using plastic and carbon fiber, mm-hmm. and then driving off with it afterwards.
Well, see, I like to hear stories like that, because it's kind of like if you go back to the old Star Trek version, the replicator, you know, you could put something inside this thing and it would duplicate it, you know. If you had the raw materials fed into this machine and they're able, or maybe not even need the raw materials, you could just pull them out of the air, because, you know, pretty much like we're carbon-based and pretty much everything else is out there. And if you had something that could, you know, change the structure... I mean, that sounds all science fiction, but if you listen to what's been said here just alone, it's becoming science fact right before your very eyes, you know?
Mm-hmm. Dreams are becoming a reality.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, well, it's just this. If the scientific description of humanity is carbon-based bipedal life forms, why do they have a tax on carbon?
Because they're trying to make us illegal, man. Mm-hmm.
They're not trying to make you illegal, they just want to charge you for existing.
Well, they already do that to a big extreme, because they want to charge you for the carbon tax, for one, but you got taxes
Why do you think they throw such a fit and they have such a hate on here in the U.S. for homeless people? They're the people that don't have to pay to exist. They don't like that.
You know, I never looked at it from that point of view, but you're right.
Even to the point where they ban charity groups such as churches and various NGOs from feeding homeless people. Yeah, because we don't need you. You don't contribute to society, i.e. you don't give us money for your existence.
Right, and therefore we don't want anybody helping you exist.
Yeah. Scary thing about it, guys.
Just crawl off somewhere and die.
Scary thing about it is the folks that think like that are the ones that for somehow or another end up getting elected to office. You know, we don't want that bum down there, because it makes our storefront look bad. You know, who's to say which one's the bum, the store owner or the guy sitting out there trying to?
Well, that's just it though. If the bum sitting down there in front of the store was actually paying them to sit there, they wouldn't care how bad they looked.
Oh, no. They'll probably have a bum license. You can be a bum if you get this license or permit.
Panhandling permit. Yeah, it's called a panhandling license.
Yeah. Is that crazy?
A guy stopped me outside my apartment 2 nights ago, and he said, he was very polite, and he said, "I'm very sorry, sir, but I have no money, blah, blah, blah." The usual spiel. And literally 50 yards from the entrance to my condo is a restaurant. And I said, "Well, look, my friend, you don't need money to exist, but you do need food. You know, I'm just going to dinner myself. Do you want to sit down and have some food? I'll buy you a beer." "Oh, no, 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 I need money." I said, "Look, mate, I'm not responsible for you, but I'll buy you food if you're hungry. But why would I give you money that I have to go and earn?" You know, everybody deserves a meal in my book. And if you're hungry, then I'll feed you. But I don't know what you're going to do with the rest of it. That's not my business, that's not my concern, but to see a man hungry, I've been homeless myself, you know, that's the best I can do for you, because I don't know who you are.
Well, see, I don't see no problem with that, man. That's to offer him to go over to have a meal, if he turns it down, then chances are he probably didn't need it that much, he wanted something else,
yeah.
But, you know, we had an episode like that in the past there, where there was some individuals we were trying to help out, but all they wanted was us to send the money. They didn't want us to send the supplies that they needed. So
right.
we kind of weed through those kind of people like that. We're not opposed to trying to help somebody out if it's needed, you know, send whatever supplies they need. But when it's just
They were wanting money for books. It's like, well, we got a way to get you the books. Yeah. Oh, no, we need the money.
Because we can ship books in. I mean,
yeah, but you can't go out and buy a Ferrari without the books. You'd have to, you know.
Yeah, you'd have to get the books to where he was supposed to be going.
But go, yeah, exactly. They didn't like that pop at all, man.
Anyway, what do you say we take a quick music break and refresh our coffee and such and come back and hit it again? All right, everybody, listen to Mad Science. Stay tuned. We're going to throw in a few tunes, and then we'll be back. Peace and love, everybody. Take care.
Oh, space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise, its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Yeah!
crap! Ah, crap! Operator, give me the number for 911.
All right, and we're back, and you're listening to Mad Science with old crazy-haired Shaziz and Thomas and Steve and Mike, and we've been having a pretty brilliant conversation. You know, Stephen Gibbs posted something in the chat room. He said the blueprint is part of a larger comprehensive effort with California covering 22 million acres in the state's desert region. Collectively, these lands contain the potential to generate up to 20,000 megawatts of renewable energy development while meeting federal and state renewable energy and climate change goals throughout 2040. See, whereas I'm not a believer in the whole global warming slash climate change slash climate disruption, whatever it's going to be next week, according to political or who gets caught smudging which paperwork. You know, these guys out there sit there and claim that they want alternative energy. So here we are in the alternative energy world trying to give them exactly what they wanted. You know, you would think that some sort of form of cooperation would be at hand if the whole planet was heating up and we was getting ready to boil and burn and toast and roast and all that kind of jazz. You'd think that anybody out there who wanted to save the world would be wanting to hear from guys like us that talk about all these different types of technologies. You know, better ways to store energy, better ways to move energy from point A to point B, more efficient electric motors, and so on and so forth. But it doesn't go down like that. See, it turns out that the best way to get your point across is to, number one, try to deplete everyone's rights, and number two, try to milk their pocket for every penny you can get with the bogus carbon tax. You know, never mind the fact that a lot of people around the globe are struggling just to pay their light bill, but when you say something like before your election that under my plan, electric bills will necessarily skyrocket, and you can open a coal factory, but chances are you're going to go bankrupt under my plan, you know, yet the guy gets elected anyway. You know, that's not productive towards making things efficient out there. If there really is a global warming problem out there, you would think that we'd be already mostly to the point of solving the issue, because I've been listening about global warming for 20, 30, 40 years now. All right, how long does it take to heat up the planet, for Pete's sake? I got a space heater. You can hear it in the background. I'm trying to stay warm. I'm over hacking and gacking because I got that old wintertime cold coming on. But, you know, hey, it's global warming. I just blew a bunch of global warming out my nose in the bathroom there on the break, so I'm doing all right. Charge me some carbon tax for it. But if it was really a serious problem and the governments of this world really took it serious enough to like Fukushima over there, all right, you got radioactive water flooding into the ocean, running the Pacific Ocean, basically boiling up the fish and plant life over there, but you don't hear about it on mainstream media anymore. So maybe it ain't a problem. I mean, the governments aren't stressed out about it. Companies like BP still pumping corrects it down into the ocean. You know, this is something that's supposed to cause the oil to disperse. They call it dispersement. And so if it's doing that to the oil, the crude oil, what's it doing to the fish? You don't hear about that on the mainstream media. And apparently the governments don't think it's that big of a deal. Otherwise, you'd probably be hearing about it. And the whole climate change slash global warming, you hear about that all the time. You got to get this through a political agenda going through there. We all got to get out of our cars and start driving around in 65-passenger rickshaws with Steve pulling, you know, uphill in the snow.
Both ways.
Yeah, both ways. So, am I crazy? Well, yeah, don't answer that. I probably am crazy. But if there's a problem out there, and you got hundreds, if not thousands, if not millions of people in the alternative energy community working on solutions, wouldn't you think you'd want to back those individuals instead of telling somebody, hey, you can have that solar panel over there, but you're going to have to pay extra taxes because you're taking away from our system over here. You see what I'm talking about? No? Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Don't everybody jump to the microphone at once, you might chip a tooth.
Here in the States, I can't believe California is the only state that's really pushing.
Well, California is disgusting, man. You know, they whereas they could get exactly what they want, their means by which they go about it is basically hardcore communism, man. I mean, come on. You're right next to the ocean, and you're boo-hooing about a so-called drought while it's raining like cats and dogs outside, and you can't figure out how to get water to keep your people with water. So instead, what you do is you tell them, dig up your grass, throw down some brown rocks, and that's going to be your new lawn.
Essentially, that's actually adding to the problem.
Yeah, you're going to add more heat.
Yeah, you're creating more heat and more evaporation.
Well,
say your ground is going to be useless too after doing that because of soil erosion.
I talked
to a guy a while back out in California, and he's having one heck of a time trying to do a garden.
Well, there ain't no cure for stupid, Mike.
No.
And these guys out there that are in charge out there, like I said, why they aren't out here on YouTube doing some research, serious research, because didn't they say that there was like 500 days to climate chaos? We've already come and passed all that, right?
Probably a couple years ago.
Yeah, well, doomsday ain't hit yet, but there's still the problem according to what you hear on the mainstream media. All right, well, there's the problem, okay? Well, how are we going to fix this problem? We're going to take money out of Thomas's wallet, and if he doesn't give it to us, we're going to go over there and beat him toothless and throw him up in the jailhouse.
Which is costing somebody else more money.
Yeah. So, you ain't getting the money from Thomas, but you are getting the money from somebody else because the poor other taxpayer on the other side got to pay to feed Thomas in the jailhouse. They'll come over and ask me about climate change government out there, you know. I'll tell you how to fix it. First off, get your scientists to show all the numbers out there, you know, all the data, not just cherry pick what's going to say global warming's real so I can keep my funding kind of stuff.
It's a cover-up, man. There is global warming, but it's caused by all that hot air. You just shut those politicians up and we'd actually have no problem with any more heat.
I agree.
I think you might have just solved it.
You put Congressman Baumwater out there, at least you know what you're going to get. He tells you right up front, hey, elect me, I'll screw you on taxes. I like a guy who's honest, man. You know, I'd vote for Congressman Baumwater in a heartbeat. You know, if you hadn't seen any of my Congressman Baumwater videos, you need to check them out. He's brilliant. But, you know, like I said, the problem's out there, the solution's out there, and guys like Robert Murray Smith, who's doing work, you know, and amazing technology. If you can shoot a piece of plastic with an AK-47 and it stops the bullet, that's some pretty tough material, you know, because there's some serious impact going on there. That tough material could be used to make tough things that would last for a long time. And just like carbon fiber.
They don't want that.
Yeah.
Like Chuck Norris.
Huh?
What? Chuck Norris is the toughest thing in America.
Yeah, and he's lasted a long time.
They say if a zombie bites Chuck Norris, instead of him turning into a zombie, the zombie turns into Chuck Norris.
Oh, wow. There'd be a whole army of Chuck Norrises running around. We'd sick them on the government. Anyway, you know, that we got all the technology we need for to build the perfect deals that could last. It's just a matter of, you know, hey, you're going to go out and buy it. You're going to go out and support this company over here who will sell you a fairly decent product that after 10, 20 years, you're going to have to buy another one because that's going to fall apart. And then you can justify it by saying, well, you know, they got to earn a living too, you know. But backtrack where that appliance just came from, all right? They charging you 300% or more markup on a product that they had somebody else in another foreign nation build as cheaply as possible while not
so,
even...
So cheaply in such a shoddy situation that they actually had to put nets outside the windows to keep the workers from committing suicide?
Yeah. And you know, not taking care of the people that are working for them, so you pretty much support that ruthless regime on the other side. It's going to be slave driving their employees to the extent that they feel like jumping out in there and potentially landing on one of those nets. And what do they do with the individual when they get him on the net? They take him, probably put him back to work. Back everywhere, gig, go nowhere. You know? It's crazy.
If you look back at all the things that you've ever had to repurchase in your lifetime, imagine the amount of money you could have saved.
Yeah. I mean, we got technology out there that is just mind-boggling. And most folks, when they look at an incandescent light bulb, they don't think about a mind-boggling. It's just a light bulb. What can you do with a light bulb? Well, somebody made millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, with a light bulb. They took this doggone light bulb, put it into a nifty little container, called it an easy bake oven, put an advertisement on TV, and they sold this to kids who, even adults, my son went out and got an easy bake oven because he said he could cook him up a couple brownies in that sucker really quick, you know. So you took a light bulb, turned it into a toy, which is also another useful appliance because you can actually do some baking in the doggone thing. You know? So, and a light bulb's pretty doggone amazing. A 150-watt incandescent light bulb puts off a massive amount of heat. Try touching one after it's been on for a few minutes.
You insulate it and contain all that heat in one area. There's a lot of heat there.
Aha! I like the way you think, brother. So, instead of wasting that energy, because according to conservation of energy, energy can neither be created nor destroyed, so we're going by their rules. Yeah, where's that energy going? Yeah, right now it's just dispersing out in your room, making your room warmer. So, you know, take that energy, consolidate it, keep it contained, move it from point A to point B. There's so much you can do with that, it's just crazy. You know?
One thing about that conservation energy... The fine print in that is based on a sealed system.
Yep.
Where there's no loss from even like a closed circuit. There is no such thing. It's an impossibility. They've known this a long time ago. That law can't be proved and it can't be disproved. It was just an accepted theory in order to make all the mathematical portions of it work.
Well, my mom always told me you got to humor those folks. So when I talk about the laws of physics, keep in mind I'm not a preacher of the laws of physics. Matter of fact, I'm a rebel against the laws of physics, and I'd probably would try to break every law of physics. If they had a physics jail, I'd be the first cellmate in there. All right. But in order to humor those folks, I will say, look, hey, I'm not trying to defy Lenz's law. I'm just trying to, whenever I want something off of this system over here, I'm just not going to allow it to invoke Lenz's law because I understand how it works, you know? So if I'm not putting energy back into the same generator that I'm trying to get energy out of and causing that bucking force against each other, then all I'm going to do is take the energy I want off of that and put it into a completely different form, such as like you put a pan of water on the stove and you put heat underneath there, you boil that water, you got steam, now you have just as much water as you had before, it's just in a gas now. You see what I mean?
Yeah, just changing the form and using it in a different way.
Yeah, and then when you want to use it again, you take it and bring it back on the other side, you cool it down, and you got water again. You know, the Navy's been reusing water over and over and over and over again for as long as I can remember of the Navy. Boiler systems and everything like that. They got condensers on there. How do you think they keep fresh water on the ship, man? They got desalination plants on there. So they're able to reuse that water. Where's that water go once it's done? You know, once you drink the water, where's it go? It goes back into the system. It's still there. All you did was move the energy from where it was to where you wanted it in the form of what you wanted it, and plasma, even incandescent light bulbs or whatever, they always have byproducts to them. When light is heat, heat is light, vice versa. So if you're able to see the plasma, then that's visible light spectrum, then you must have heat in there as well. So if you have copper tubing or stainless steel tubing inside that plasma, that heat will transfer from the plasma into that metal and then heat up any material that you push it in through that tubing. Doesn't that make sense? Like a copper tubing around your incandescent light bulb, you can make a percolator coffee pot. You know, heat up that doggone water with the light bulb. You got the light and your coffee being made at the same time.
There's patents out there for water heaters that use the light bulb. It was centrally located in the bottom of it, and it, you had a tube going up through, and it created more of a convection, not like our regular hot electric hot water. There's no real convection going on there where it keeps it circulating.
They
used light bulbs for water heaters at one time.
If you can find one of those diagrams, give me a link to that, because I would love to build one myself just for giggles, and I'd do a video on it.
Yeah, I'll have to get back to you on that. But yeah, I have the patents saved. I saved tons of patents.
I know it's possible. I mean, because I put a pyrometer onto the top of that doggone thing to test the temperature. Man, it got up over 200 and some odd degrees. I was like, dude, that's hot.
Yeah.
That's a lot of heat coming off of there.
You could use that for a solar water heater. Say you only have like a 15-watt bulb. Well, if you have like a 15-watt bulb running all day long in a water heater from a solar panel, there's a good energy storage. Instead of storing it as electric, you could compensate with heat-wise.
You know, an example of what you're talking about could actually go back to old fish tanks. You ever notice that if you ain't careful and you got your light on those fish tank light bulbs, they put off a lot of heat. You'll literally evaporate all the water out of that fish tank if you ain't careful.
Yeah.
So there's energy transfer going on there. It's actually keeping the doggone fish warm. And those old fish tank heaters, you know, those were just pretty much a tungsten element down inside a glass tube, and did pretty much the same thing, heated with an old fish tank water heater.
Yeah, it's just not turned up high enough to give you a light.
Yeah. So there you go, man. But those are possibilities, those are potentials, those are technologies that are readily available right there for you. And, you know, most of what I do on my my YouTube channel is trying to show people things that will get them ideas to put the seed in their mind. They grab this idea, hey, you know, there's something there, and they run with it, and they create. You know, I think the worst part that we got in this world is that people's brains are becoming stagnant. You know, they're not using them. You know, it's kind of like if you don't use it, you lose it kind of scenario. You know, if you're really good at math and you just stop doing math, eventually you forget, you know, how to do math. You know, and if they're not teaching them very good in the beginning, it don't take much to lose it. Now everybody's running around Black Friday and Black and Ice and fighting each other in the dirt for some bargain that the company that bought it, that's selling it to you, they didn't pay as much as you're going to pay for it, but you're willing to beat somebody up to get it? Did anybody else besides me see the ridiculousness there?
That's crazy.
That's nuts.
I can't see the logic. People don't just stop and step back and think for a minute.
Well, I think that what we've been doing here for quite some time out here on Shaziz Radio and all the other networks affiliated with this is trying to put these ideas on the table, you know, and bring these brilliant minds together. I'm just kind of impatient. I'd like to get everybody together in one shop, even if it was only once a year. We'd talk all year long, get our designs and our materials ready, and then converge on a building, slap this thing together, prove it'll work, and then and send it out there. Have somebody market it if need be to fund the next go or whatever. See, I'm not opposed to making money with our ideas. I'm just opposed to those individuals out there who would try to sell you some free energy device plans or whatever that may or may not work. You know, when I say free energy, I mean it. I give my ideas away. I don't care if somebody else makes money off of it, but my goal isn't to make no money. My goal isn't to get famous or notoriety or anything. I'm just trying to point out the blatantly obvious. You know, you're wasting a lot of heat in your cars. You're wasting a lot of heat in your light bulbs, you're wasting a lot of heat in your appliances, and it's costing you a lot of money. So, if you can get your doggone appliances in your house to run more efficiently or take something off the power grid to where you ain't paying the man, that man's going to be a little bit more respectful for your dollar when he has to earn it. Does anybody disagree with that?
No, I totally agree with that.
You know, you call up the light company, they don't care about you. They don't care. They'll shut you off in a heartbeat. That's pretty much what they told me. You know, pay your bill and then we'll turn your power back on. They didn't care about I had refrigerators and to keep cool the food that I had stored in there. They didn't care about my kids having to stay warm or cool or whatever. They just cared about that money. And no matter what I said to them, they refused to work with me. And they had no kind of safety net or nothing like that. So they had me over barrel. If I didn't pay, they'd turn the switch off. So I decided from that point on, I'm dedicate the rest of my entire life to studying everything there is to know about alternative energy. And when I get that accomplished, I'm going to share it with each and every one of their customers for free. And when their wallet gets thin, they're going to have me to blame for it. You know, if I can show everybody and his brother how to save at least $1 on their doggone light bill, I kick a campaign out there that'll just drop a boot upside these guys' booty, man. Because, you know, a dollar out of every single household out there is a dollar out of their pocket, and it's going to start adding up. You see what I mean? That's what it's all about, man. You know, and if you got a solar panel on one side of your house taking out the three or four lights, that's three or four lights you're not paying nobody for. You know? And then you take that money that you saved and put it back and save up and buy you another solar panel put on the other side of the house. Keep working your way towards energy independence. And that way by the time they get around to trying to charge you for carbon tax, you ain't even using no carbon. What do you think?
Well,
she is. Yeah.
The population of America is roughly 350 million.
Yeah.
And somebody came up with a opportunity for every man, woman, and child in the country to save $1. Then there would be $1/3 of $1 billion in disposable income to go to people who actually create something useful and spend it there.
And that's per month, too, because, you know, we're talking about when you save a dollar, that's a dollar per month. So there's 12 months out of the year, so that ramps it up even farther. So that money's not going to the power man. That money's going to the people. Say, if I
create...
Let me ask you a question. If I created a device that would save you guaranteed, without a doubt, $50 per month on your electric bill, would that be worth purchasing?
Build it and they will come. Definitely. Usually wearing funny dark glasses and in a dodgy suit.
Well, I say we work on a device like that. I say we work on a device that will save people $50 per month. Guaranteed. If this don't save you $50 per month, we'll give you your money back and you can keep the machine.
I think it could be done.
It sounds very much like the Bronson Shaver to me, mate.
Well, you know, hey, there's a market out there. But as long as I know for a fact that I'm not screwing nobody over, I wouldn't be opposed to selling a device. You know, I don't want to sell somebody
something.
I'm not into selling snake oil. You know, somebody got to be able to fund these doggone alternative energy researchers out there. Like, I wouldn't have a problem sending Thomas money for tools. If I had the money to send Thomas for tools, I wouldn't have a problem sending him because I know what he's working on. And the same goes for you and Mike. I wouldn't have a problem. You know, I'd do it in a hurry just because I know that something would get done. You see what I mean?
Definitely, mate. I mean, we're coming to a stage in society now where we're going to have to start making some serious decisions if we want other people looking after us that don't represent our interests, or if we're going to take some level of responsibility for what we need. Right. Heat, shelter.
Well, if we put together a group to jointly work out an effort to find out, and we actually put together a prototype, and amongst us as a group, we knew 100%, 150,000% beyond a shadow of doubt, this device does exactly what we say. I wouldn't be opposed to going trying to do a GoFundMe account kind of thing to get out there on the market to everybody, you know. But, you know, as it stands, unless I got something that I know without a shadow of a doubt, I'm not asking anybody for a penny. I'm not asking for nobody for nothing. I'm trying to give all these ideas and suggestions out to everybody and his brother as fast and as furious as possible. Show you things that are from the past that worked really well back then, that worked just as good now. I'm trying to show you technology that they've let slip out, whether, you know, they don't figure the average Joe's going to figure you can spin up a computer hard drive and get 450 volts AC out of it. You know, who does that? He wasn't meant for that. It was to store data. But that's not the only one out there. There's tons of them. Things that you get out of microwave ovens and the X13s out of air conditioners, you know. You got a ready-built generator. Why go out and buy a brand new wind turbine when you can build it yourself out of junk?
Shiz is.
Yeah.
I've traveled a lot, been all around the world and back a number of times. And I didn't do it in 80 days because I actually wanted to learn something useful on the way. So I've actually been at it since 1992. I haven't lived in my own country since 1992, and I've been to so many places, and I've lived in so many countries. And some of the what they might consider primitive cultures honestly believe that your biggest contribution in society is to be a burden to nobody. Whereas supposedly the developed societies seem to think that, you know, you... everybody has to fix your problems for you. They need to supply you with water, light, heating, shelter, nutrition.
Well, I'm thinking more.
What's the answer to these questions why we've outsourced all these basic fundamental requirements to people that deliberately and intentionally, in many cases, make it beyond our reach to actually reasonably gain these?
Well, because it's like this. If you don't need the government, there ain't no reason for the government. So they got to make sure that there's a need so they can have job security. You know, the average Joe out there, if you own your own piece of property, there's a deal that I seen on 1 acre of land you can make enough food to survive on. All right? Not everybody has an acre of land, but if everybody took their quarter acre or their eighth of an acre and kind of grew stuff together, they could swap out, you know, tomatoes with whatever. But then you got the government try to put regulations on that. You can't trade food with your neighbor because EPA or the Food and Drug Administration, under the guise of health and safety or whatever. You can make it for your own use, but you can't trade it or swap it. Or
excuse me?
Yeah.
You grow food in your backyard, you let your kids pick that food and eat it, they'll take your kids from you. That's child abuse.
Well, see, and they think, if they're
willing to go that far, it won't be long before they'll say, you're growing food and you're eating it?
we have to lock you up. You're trying to kill yourself.
That wouldn't surprise
me. I mean, you can be arrested and charged for trying to kill yourself and failing.
They can charge you,
but there's nothing they can do about it if you succeed. What are they going to do? Take your corpse and put it in prison?
That type of thing where your neighbors ought to even be backing you on that type of thing.
Exactly.
Right. I think you should say this, guys. A woman tried to grow tomatoes in her front garden. Not in the back, but in the front of the house. A number of years ago, and the city ordinance tried to get her evicted. She had the temerity to try and produce something from the earth that was actually useful.
Well, see, now on that, if that ain't a red flag to everybody out there, you know, the farmer that went to jail for digging a pond on his own property to store rainwater, you know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, but you're stealing from the power company, Shizzies. Those shareholders demand their interest. If they don't get their dividends, then they can't sail around the world in massive yachts, drive around in cars that we're never going to be able to afford. So don't you dare steal from those from the power company.
Yeah, because one spoonful of caviar in their mouth is the world, and that's going to stop all the wars and global warming.
Yeah, well, it's like in The Simpsons, the guy that owned the nuclear power station had a box of ivory back scratchers. But he always needed one more.
Yeah. Isn't this just it?
I'm kind of getting sick and tired of listening to large corporations accuse people of stealing when effectively the shareholders that buy their shares manage to get those loans from banks at 0% interest to buy shares with to make massive amounts of money off in the first place.
Yeah.
How about we just say, okay, well, we're sick and tired of listening to your nonsense. We've got an electrical energy generating device that works per household now. So how about this? You've 30 days to remove your materials from my property that you claim belong to you, because we can generate our own electricity. Failure to do so, you will incur storage charges. If those storage charges are not paid, we will send debt collectors to any office within our region to recover the costs.
If they leave it there, it's abandoned. Hey, if they leave it there after that set period of time is up, it's abandoned and it's free to do with as you please.
Yeah, I like the way you guys think.
Salvage rights, sell it off.
It's time to send the power company the bill. And everybody's all going to like, oh, boo-hoo, you're going to take all these people at the electric company's job. No, you're going to give them more jobs, that maybe even a job that they're going to get some respect at. You know, because there's still going to have to be people that know how to maintain appliances and stuff for other people out there. There's still going to be the need for the electrician and the electronics techs and all that.
I was going to say, the only people who are going to be out of a job didn't have any marketable skills to begin with, and they managed to bamboozle the world into thinking that we needed them.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much my point, though.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. It's
a bunch of worthless people. They can't do anything, and all they do is stand around spouting nonsense.
Yeah, but then if you call up because you got your power shut off and ask for their mercy, they ain't going to show it to you because all they want is that dollar bill.
Because that's
not
a
shopping department.
They don't need mercy to work there.
if anybody thinks that I'm a raging lunatic, I would suggest that you ring your power company and you tell them that you have recently bought a new invention from China, which means that you can completely power your house off-grid. Now, when would you like to come and collect your equipment and see how they react?
Yeah, they probably ain't even got no contingency plan for just such a deal, because they think the ones they put it on your property, you know, they got a right to it, you know?
I think that's why a lot of these new taxes are popping up, because they know that time is coming.
Well, you know what? The day that time gets here, Oshas is going to have a party.
Well,
that's it.
Mike, apparently the Spanish government believes they own the sun because they're levying a 25-cent surcharge on people that produce solar-powered electricity on their own land in the Republic of Spain.
They signed bills here in Oklahoma for the same damn nonsense. The only way to get around it is not to be connected to the grid at all with whatever power you're generating.
Yeah, but see, they even figured out a dirty trick around that. They got the places where that if you're not on the power grid, they can consider your house to be non-inhabitable.
Right.
That's actually you in Florida.
You'll take your kids.
If you disconnect yourself from the mains grid, the United Nations consider your house to be unsuitable for habitation. And they're actually evicting people in the US, not under US law, but under UN regulations.
What about those folks over there in the third world countries that are living in mud huts that aren't connected to the power grid? You going to evict them too?
If they could, they want those people in poverty because that's where how they manage to get them to work in mines and whatnot, refining things like tantalum that will kill them in 5 years for a handful of rice a day just to feed their kids.
Man, what a mess. See, the key about this whole deal is to stop asking for permission. You know, it's your property, just build it. And if your neighbors stand side by side with you, stop living in fear of what they're going to do to me. Oh, well, if I take off the power grid, they're gonna condemn my house. No, you take it off the power grid anyway. You run your solar panels, your wind generators, do whatever it is that you can do to, even if you're a believer in the global warming. If you're a believer in the global warming, you should already be doing it. You know?
Well, do you hear what people keep saying? If you don't pay taxes, you make no contribution to society. But so-called primitive cultures, as I said, consider making sure that nobody has to provide you with anything is the greatest contribution you can make to any society, because nobody is responsible for you.
Thomas, have you ever been driving down the road and hit a chuck hole and blew your tire out and busted your rim?
No.
I have.
My wife did this. She managed to burst 3 tires on 1 car.
All right. Well,
I've never had a car wreck either.
My tax dollars have benefited American citizens on multiple occasions by blowing their wheels out with that chuck hole that my tax dollars put in that road. All right. So I'm thinking my tax dollars are going to good use, you know, because that's job security for the guys who make wheels and tires and front end alignments. You see the backwards view of the world that one can get whenever you sit back and look at the lack of common sense.
I was going to say, so I shouldn't mention the idea of using silicon carbide powder and silicon rubber to make tires that last close to 300,000 to 400,000 miles.
Yeah, if a tire, like let's say,
can't be punctured. There's no air inside of them to be punctured. They're soft enough that they act like a tire that's basically full of air as far as the give to absorb bumps in a road.
Well, there you go, man. It's like them running flat tires that cost you a couple $100 a piece. You can get poked a nail in it. It'll still stay up. It won't go flat. So chances are you're probably not going to swerve off the road when that tire goes flat and freaks you out or whatever.
The main thing though is that the silicon is extremely, extremely sticky stuff. If you put a little dab of that stuff, that silicon too made by GE, on a piece of glass and try to pull it off, like after it dries, grab it and start pulling back away from the window to pull it off, it'll break the glass. It'll break the glass before that piece of silicon will just peel off of the glass. It's adhered to the glass. Right? So silicon carbide is the hardest substance that you can get that's not diamond. And we're talking about
Chuck Norris.
Little teeny tiny sharp shards of this stuff firmly gripped by that silicon rubber that are making, as the silicon rubber is worn down enough that those little points stick out, that's what you're riding on. It's like having a really fine grit sandpaper. So if you use a fine enough powder of that stuff, if you peel out on the road, instead of your tire leaving rubber all over the road, the road will be black and shiny because you polished it off. You know?
Is it out in California they were making the roads with recycled tires?
Yeah. They were doing it here in Missouri, too.
Mm-hmm.
It was grinding it up and mixing it with the asphalt.
I'll say, if you actually treat the asphalt material properly, you could actually get rubber out of it.
Sure is.
Yeah.
Do you know why they've got a place called The Hill in Washington, D.C.?
The Hill?
Capitol Hill.
Oh.
Is that in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I think so. Because I think that's indicative of...
Yeah, you're right, but I don't know why. Why do they call it The Hill?
Well, it's indicative of how much dirt they swept under the rug.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was just because it rhymed with Bill, you know, because they sent Bill.
Well, and you also know that they say stuff rolls downhill, too, right?
Well, I think it's more along the case of you have a patent for a free energy device that's going to take off the infrastructure of sending electricity through power lines all over the globe. Hell no. Let's sweep that under the rug. The quickest way America is going to reach space again is the Capitol Hill is going to get there first.
Yeah, just like the Tower of Babel there. Anyway, the technology's out there, guys. It's just
this is not an attack on America, because pretty much every developed country is in a space race at the minute by how much dirt they can sweep under their rug.
Yep.
It's piling up.
I tell you what, man, if they asked for volunteers to Mars, I don't care if Mars wasn't inhabitable. I would be the first one to raise my hand. Send me, because I want off this crazy rock, man. I get over on the other side when they...
You don't like being on the third rock from the sun?
It wouldn't be so bad if you weren't with a bunch of people that's lost a doggone mind trying to tell you that it's global warming while you're shoveling 20 inches of it off your snow, off your driveway out there in the dead of winter. You know, so if you're worried about climate change and you're worried about the planet heating up, but yet you're still dropping bombs on foreign nations, kicking crud up in the air, you think there ain't some carbon coming off of them bombs that are blowing stuff up in the air?
Excuse me, but building that bomb takes energy.
Yeah.
Just building it.
Flying the jet over there to drop it.
Wasted energy going into that, as well as wasted materials and everything else, too. So if you're the second you blow one up, that means they have to make another one to fill that void.
There's
you got energy going in, energy coming out, and none of it's useful. All of it's being wasted.
There's a saying from where I come from called "Practice what you preach, brother." If you're going to be up there saying the planet's doomed and we got to reduce our carbon footprint, then you need to take and shut down some of them corporate jets.
For you atheists out there, how about we just you practice what you lecture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for all you depopulationists out there, hey, there's plenty of room on the other side of the cliff, you know. I ain't advocating anybody jump, but if you believe you got to save the planet, I mean, and you want everyone else to jump, but...
You first.
Yeah.
If you want the world depopulated, you first.
So, now, you know, common sense.
I'll wait until afterwards, because I'm pretty sure there's enough room for people.
Yeah, I'll save the last molecule.
Here's an idea for you, Shaziz.
Yeah?
For the depopulationists, why don't we have the big conference where we can all meet up somewhere environmentally friendly, like a big field? And what we'll do is we'll get hundreds of thousands of them together in one spot, give them lemming outfits, and make sure that field is next to a 400-foot cliff, and tell them it's a 26-mile marathon.
Well, the problem is...
Sorry, Mike. I think Mike was talking something now.
With our resources that we have, we won't be depleting them so much if we weren't shipping them all over the place when you have the stuff in one area. Like shipping oil. You probably got boats going past each other going in opposite directions hauling oil.
Oh, yeah, hauling the same product.
Actually, out in the Gulf, we've got a traffic jam of boats out there full of oil because of the surplus oil that we've got now from all the, between the fracking and the Saudi nations basically pumping out more and more oil at a lower price to try to basically drive those frackers out of business.
Yeah.
You know, they're having an oil war right now. That's why you're getting $2 a gallon and less oil or gasoline where you're at. The last time I saw it was like $1.65 a gallon. I mean, how long has it been since you've seen those prices?
A long time.
I'm going to have to look up and find that doggone... there's a sound effect out there where somebody stops the record, where you hear the record needle scratching across there. You know, kind of like, hold the phone there, that kind of thing. Because I want to, like, figure out how to build the loudest potential amplifier on the planet so that I can just, like, play that sound effect real loud and get everybody's attention and say, y'all nuts, man.
You know? Are we talking Jaws, the original movie, where you've got the sea captain that drags his fingernails down the blackboard and says, we need a bigger generator?
Yeah, there you go. But look, there's nuclear power plants all over the planet that produce nuclear waste. And what exactly is nuclear waste? It's radioactive material that is not hot enough to boil the water to the extreme to turn it into steam. However, it's still radioactive. And in order to refine it, it would probably cost you more to try to refine it back into heavier, more hotter rods that you could stick back down in there. So they keep adding these things up and they keep shoving them in the ground, you know. There's so much potential energy stuck off in the doggone dirt that's just, you know, going to be there for until... What's the half-life of depleted materials out of a radioactive, doggone nuclear...
It depends on the material. So the stuff they're burying is really long-lasting stuff.
Well,
at least like 50 years, I imagine.
We know that when that stuff is deteriorating, it's when it's depleting itself, it's releasing energy. And so why aren't they tapping into that energy on a completely different scale as right now the boiling water, for Pete's sake? We were boiling water back in way before in the 1800s, boilers and all that kind of stuff. All right, you're boiling water to produce steam, to turn a turbine, to make electricity.
Here's a question for you, she says. If nuclear tip materials are so heavily controlled, why on earth did they give 350 tons of it to Iraq and 1,000 tons of it to Afghanistan?
Because the
kind of ongoing joke is depleted uranium, the gift that keeps on giving for 30,000 years, and that's its half-life.
Well, see, if those neutrons and the radiations coming off of there can be passed through something that's... phosphorescent, it'll cause a visible light. So you could literally stick a solar cell, some phosphorescent material, mix a little bit of that radioactive material into the phosphorescent material, and then seal it in a little little piece of lead, and seal that up so that you're not getting lead in the environment. And you've got a continuous source of power coming off of that solar cell.
Yeah.
Day or night, doesn't matter. It's putting power.
Huh. Guys, did you see that link I put in earlier? When I was talking about the butterfly wings, I couldn't find the article I was looking for, but I did find the article about birds' wings. And it's the title of it was from Gizmodo, Scientists Discover the Key to Making Paint That Never Fades. Now, this is a real interesting one with nanoparticle 3D printers, because what they're talking about here, let me just find the section of the article that really piqued my interest. It was bird feathers, by contrast, stay bright because their feathers contain nanostructures that amplify specific wavelengths of light. It's called structural color. Basically, the feather cells contain a series of tiny pores spaced in such a way they only reflect, for instance, shade of red or shades of blue. And the guys in this team have managed to recreate the effect by using microparticles suspended in the solution. But when this solution dries and the distance between the particle changes, so does the visible light spectrum that's reflected by them.
It's brilliant.
So if you have a solution that you can heat to make it contract, or cool to make it, heat to make it expand, or cool to make it contract, you can change the level, the light wave that comes out of them by the amount of energy that you put into them.
So you could have pretty much a car that if you wanted to be red on one day or blue on the next day, you could actually get it to change color just by adding a little bit of temperature to it, like the old mood rings.
They made matchbox cars that did that.
Yeah.
When you put water on them or put them in the fridge.
I used to have a mug with a woman in a bikini, and you know, as the tea used to go down the mug, that bikini weren't there anymore.
I don't see. Actually, since it's nano-sized components you're working with, I'm seeing the potential to make almost a negligible amount of energy required. Monitors, TVs, billboards that have video screens on them.
You know what I'm hearing here? This is like a think tank. It's amazing that with all the existing technology that they got coming out and all the articles on the other technologies, sparking off so many different innovations and new ideas for new products. This is what I'm talking about, guys. If we can get the right people in the right doggone shop with the materials that they need and encourage them to just build, just create, you know, you'd be surprised at what we, the people, could come up with. If we had a organization that we the people backed, you know, we're backing all the corporations all the time because we buy from them. So what if there was a way that you could pitch in a dollar to an organization that their main job was to fund these doggone researchers out there, to give them the computers and the software and the stuff that they needed, and what they got coming out of there is open source to the public out there. You're a partial owner just by putting a dollar in the doggone thing, you know? You see what I mean?
Actually, if it's open source, you're a partial owner just by existing.
Yeah, there you go.
By putting anything into it, you're a partial contributor.
There.
You're actually helping become a part of the solution rather than a part of the problem.
But see, if we supported each other like that, I mean, we do it all the time, man, without even thinking about it. You know, when you go past one of these organizations that's out collecting donations for people and you throw some pennies in the bucket or whatever, you're helping some people out that you don't even know. You know, what's the difference? You know, you got an extra dollar in your pocket, you throw it towards this organization right here, and you know exactly what they're up to. They got all the information out there for you. It's open source. You can duplicate it.
On your feed.
Yeah.
Stop watching the brain rotting TV and come and watch, you know, some science being done. Learn something.
Yeah, learn real science.
You can use today, you know, that you can go turn around and go in your kitchen or your garage or whatever and put it to use. I mean, that was the whole point of what I was saying about doing a live feed from, like, you know, like a four-bedroom house where basically the people that live there, the reason they're there is because they're working on research together. So the basement, the garage, any space that's necessary, maybe a shed out back, whatever, is set up as a research system, and then just redecorate the place so it feels like the inside of a starship, so people will actually enjoy watching it. Because you're taking them out of their environment, the drudgery of the day, and giving them a chance to peek into and live vicariously in the future.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with entertainment that teaches somebody something, you know?
Well, and this is the thing, too, though. That becomes popular enough, you won't have, at some point, it will become a perpetual motion device, because it will actually propel itself forward by the corporations are like, hey, we can make money off of paying them to put some ads on the side there. So now you don't have to contribute anything anymore, you know?
Guys, what we need to solve the world's problems is Anthony Michael Hall and Ian Mitchell Smith. Because in 1985, with this kind of really rudimentary computers they had in those days, they managed to create Kelly LeBrock.
Yeah, mad science, or weird science.
Wait, sorry, you're talking about paint?
No, weird science was where they took a doll and they made it real.
yeah, well, I'll give you $100 if you can do that. Sorry, Mike.
When you were talking about paint, I remembered something about paint. You know how our cars rust away so fast and the paint doesn't really hold up? If you ever look at anything on the railroad, and you see that black paint, that black paint was used for 200 years. There's carbon in that paint. They realized that the carbon in the paint helps better resist the rust. That's why you see all these railroad bridges and everything holding up way longer than our cars do.
So we could literally build a car that wouldn't rot away.
We need carbon.
Well, I would like to point out that the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco.
You dropped off there, Steve.
There?
Did you fall out of your chair?
Sorry, guys, I got disconnected there. The Golden Gate Bridge in California there, Sydney Harbour Bridge, are exactly the same as the Humber Bridge in England, but smaller. My uncle spent 30 years painting the Golden Gate Bridge in Australia, in Sydney, and now he's got lesions on the brain from the lead paint that they were using in the day.
Man. Yeah. So, you know, if you actually built your metals and stuff like that that already had colors impregnated into them, you wouldn't even have to paint the doggone things.
If what they're saying about nanostructures amplify light, any available light source will light them up.
There you go, man. In the dark, your car would be stealthy.
Well, in the dark, nobody would have an excuse to running into it if it's phosphorus.
Yep.
Do we have the technology to be building cars that won't rust away? And Tesla was talking about using aluminum for cars of lightweight a long time ago. We still haven't done it.
Yeah, there's
a DeLorean chip that's still about.
There's some sporty editions out there, like the DeLorean that Steve just mentioned. That's a stainless steel body. Now, had they done the stainless steel frame, they would have held up a lot better, because the problem the DeLorean had was it had an iron frame underneath there, and if you wasn't careful, you didn't keep it undercoated or whatever, the frame would rot out from under it. But the stainless steel was still there.
The problem was they didn't offer any color options, man. It was silver and black, and that's the only colors it came in.
Yeah.
Brushed stainless or black.
Built in the home of the people that coined the phrase recreational rioting. If you're a teenager, there's a milk bottle and petrol quite handy near you where you can throw it at the police on a Saturday night. But they never rioted when it was raining.
With this rust, this past year I had two of my vehicles. The brake lines rotted away on it. Luckily, it was sitting in my driveway when it happened, but I got realizing all these manufacturers, they're making cars with steel brake lines that rust away, and you never know when it's going to blow out. But yet they have on the market, there's what's called NICOP, is nickel copper brake lines, which is a substitute for stainless steel. Why isn't that mandatory?
Yeah. Well, I would say if I was a conspiracy-minded kind of guy, I'd say the insurance companies could have a hand in that, because they make more money keeping people wrecking.
Yeah. But imagine how many accidents might have occurred and nobody knew what to cause them.
Well, that's the whole thing, man. Normally you would think that over time, when people found problems with stuff, they would make it better and they would solve that problem and move on. But they usually go to the second less cheapest material that will last slightly longer and still be able to make money. What they should have done to begin with is make those brake lines, like you said, out of something that isn't going to rust. No matter what happens, the brake lines will last longer than the car. You know, because that should be a priority. You know,
they just need to make the brake lines out of the same thing they make that black box out of.
Yeah. A black box live through a crash of an airplane, through flames and everything else, and if they can make that sturdy enough.
Why is the whole plane not made out of it?
Well, make your car like the black box. Man. You know.
Well, with the correct alignment of nanostructures, you've got an incredibly stable and strong structure.
Well, some of the materials.
You can do anything with it.
Some of the materials that you guys are talking about, like the carbon fibers and stuff like that, imagine building a house out of something like that. Especially, you know, if you live in Tornado Alley or anywhere near
then
the...
build your house out of wood.
Yeah, build it out of sticks. That's a smart thing to do whenever you know there's a 300-mile-an-hour wind could potentially come through there and blow it over.
No, I was going to say, wind that's so strong and so fast, it can take a piece of straw and poke it all the way through a piece of concrete.
Yeah.
There's no way it'll poke through that stick that stick you're making your house out of, right?
I seen some pictures of some bamboo that went through palm trees, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of power. So, if you know you're going to live in an area like that, then why are you going to still buy a house that's made out of sticks?
Because you're an idiot?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Because you spend too much time watching TV, not enough time looking at the real world.
Well, you know, if it was up to us, we would design the world in a way that everybody had a decent house that would withstand whichever environment they were living in. I would have a standard house that no matter, even if you lived in the desert, it'd be flood-proof, you know? Because who knows? Something wild could happen and it end up flooding and you got a house that would sink.
Climate change.
Yeah, climate change, that's it. The polar ice caps. And you're going to have a polar bear floating on a surfboard past your house in the desert and you're going to try to throw a life jacket on there to save his life even though polar bears can swim really nicely. And you're probably not going to fare too well.
That's well, anybody it. That thinks man-made climate change is a myth or a conspiracy theory, I do recommend they go out onto YouTube and look up the C-SPAN article where the people that were representing HAARP openly admitted, yes, the weather modification tests they did were effective.
Yeah, back during the Vietnam War, did you know they were seeding the clouds with silver iodide to try to get it to rain like heck and make a muddy mess out of everything? Plus, they were throwing chemicals down to kill the foliage so the people wouldn't have a place to hide?
Napalm.
Yeah.
I hate you.
Smells like victory.
So, our nations of the world have the power to literally build all kinds of destructive equipment and charge you the bill for it. They have the power to own the sun, own the wind, own the land, own the water, and you know your place, shut your face, pay your taxes, or we'll send our jackbooted thugs over to evict you from your own personal property, and so on and so forth, and throw you up in the jailhouse. Does that sound like what we're doing right now?
Pretty much.
Well, I, for one, I ain't having no more part of it, man. I'm not going to ask for permission. If I want a solar panel in my yard, I'm going to put a solar panel in my yard. And my neighbors are like mine because I've talked to my neighbors. So if they come over to try to get me off my land, my neighbors are going to be over here with me and I would be over there with them as well. I'll stand side by side my neighbors, and if we're going to go down, united we stand and divided we fall. We ain't playing this game. You know, if we want to grow a garden, we're going to grow a garden. That's all there is to it. And that's the mindset y'all going to have to get into out there. And stop being fearful of what they're going to do to you or potentially going to do to you. If you want to make the advancements that we are capable of making, you share the ideas freely with each other. You get together. You put some sort of organization together. And you help to support that organization to get inventors to the table and in the shops and building things. And put them out there on the market. The jobs will come right after that because there's going to be people needing to be able to make stuff. You know? Stuff ain't going to make itself. But if they put a prototype down in front of you and you know it works and it's worth the investment and the time and the effort, you guys could make more businesses out of it and leave the government to doing the government stupid stuff. And you're going to have to keep an eye on them because they like to blow stuff up a lot. And apparently, that's the way things seem to work. But you know, that's it. That's the best solution you got. It's up to we the people. It ain't going to be the corporations or any of the representation that we've had out here. Their track record stinks. Does anybody disagree with that?
I've got no argument. I would like to make this quick point because it looks like we're coming. We got an hour left or we got 5 minutes?
5 minutes.
Mike, this is kind of a bit of a random conversation sometimes, so if you got something to say, you do have to throw your two cents in there with a bit of force.
Yeah.
Get a slingshot.
But welcome, mate. It's nice to see new faces. I mean, everybody's trying to do their best here, and not everybody's got the best ideas, but it's not through lack of trying. And I'm kind of talking on my own sense there, not everybody else's.
Well, when I looked at what Mike was working on there, you know, that's how, well, I scan YouTube all the time, and I'll find these smaller channels that people aren't paying attention to. And I wanted him to be up front because what he was doing with that fluorescent bulb was brilliant. You know, he turned it into a capacitor. You take wireless energy and light up that bulb, and then you can pull energy off of that same doggone bulb with some aluminum tape. You know, to me, that's brilliant. So that's part of the puzzle that we need out here. You see what I mean?
Never mind about that, Shaziz. Where's Kelly LeBrock?
I don't know, but Hazy Days tried that same experiment, and all he did was melt a hole in the doll. He's the one that takes bong hits in between filming there, where you see the smoke cloud come out.
Sharing the information is what it's all about.
Yeah, that's how you're going to get there.
How we're going to get there.
And if somebody wants to sit down and take some time to draft up an organization idea plan for us that we could actually, you know, present to the people out there towards...
Already done it.
Huh?
Already done it.
Oh.
Gave us the link earlier.
Yeah, okay, that was the link you were talking about. We need to take a serious look at that link, discuss it, maybe even do a whole entire show dedicated to it and it alone, and, you know, just get it done, man, because, like I said, you're not going to get these corporations out there to do it. They are in it to make money. They're going to sell you what the least amount of product they can for the most amount of money.
And they'll destroy their company to make money. If it makes some money, that's all they care about.
Yep, that's it.
But
you want to talk about bettering the world?
What about all those people that are going to be killed by this thing collapsing? Hey, we're looking at the bottom line here. Do you mind? You're distracting us from, you know, from our profits.
Yeah.
Instead of waiting
for the next disaster such as the BP oil spill, let's do it right to begin with, and you ain't got to clean that mess up.
Might be a little late with all that oil sitting out in the Gulf waiting to come in, because it's coming in so fast they don't have enough space in refineries and whatnot to take it all in. They're buying it, stockpiling it out there in the Gulf, so that they won't have to pay the higher price when the price goes back up.
Yeah.
That's one thing that isn't too well known about the Gulf of Mexico. Back in the 1800s, they knew for 200 years, every so often the Gulf of Mexico would spit up the oil. It's a natural process that's been going on for hundreds of years, and nature was cleaning up itself. There probably was no need to interfere and put that core exit stuff in the oceans.
Mike, how much of that natural bacteria that dissolves the oil back into harmless compounds did core exit kill?
Yeah, that's the question.
Yeah, I think they caused more of a problem than anything. They should have just left it alone.
Yep. Well, guys, we're down to the wire. It's been a brilliant conversation. And
I think our biggest enemy is that darn wire.
Yeah, I know, man. It's like... We should just, take multiple breaks all day long and just have a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week show and just kind of wander in and out of the room. That's what the virtual labs is going to be like, because you'll have scientists wandering in and out of the room working, and you'll be able to shift over and see which one's working on what. So that's what I'm working towards. Labs all over the globe, every nation out there. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year of nothing but solutions. You want to find out who's got the advancements, you look over on their lab and see what's going on. That's what I want. That's what I want, virtual labs, so that this idea, you know, I do a show on Saturdays and I do a show on Sundays. The Knights of Roundtable on Sundays, where we talk about just about everything, world events and stuff like that, and Mad Science on Saturdays. But, you know, I'm just one man, and if I had somebody else that wanted to do another show, there's room on the board for you if you want to be a host on a show and do a science based or even alternative anything. Anything beneficial. So there we go, folks. That's that's about the best we can do. But if we can get that virtual lab scenario started, and if there's people out there that want to help try to either set it up or, you know, even pitch in a penny or something towards whoever needs it to do whatever it is, you know, working together, that's how we're going to get it done. And if you can turn on virtual labs any time, day or night, and look on something that you're already working on or researching and seeing how they're doing it, and you know, you can teach each other something. That's what it's all about here on ShazizRadio.com. So with that said, thank you, everybody. Thanks, Tom and Steve and Mike. This has been a brilliant show. If you guys have the opportunity to join me on the Knights of the Roundtable tomorrow, that would be cool.
Okay.
So with that said, everybody, you've been listening to Mad Science. Peace and love. Stay tuned.
What's going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office, and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.